go! Welcome to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast with your host, Steve Schaubecker. Get ready to get behind the scenes look into what it really takes to grow a business from scratch in the firearms industry. Join us as we welcome industry titans, Second Amendment enthusiasts, and special guests each week. I welcome you to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome back to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Steve Schaubecker, your host, and today it is my great honor to welcome Brent Cash. Brent has a lot to share with you today. It applies to what we're about so many different ways and how we do things. Today, our topic we're going to want to talk to is kind of about like being a warrior, both in life and profession, and just in what you do. But let's start out with, hey, Brent, why don't you just tell us a little bit about who you are, kind of what you've done. Give us the History 101 on Mr. Brent Cash.
Steve, first of all, I'd like to thank you, and I'm humbled by your introduction. My name is Brent Cash, and it's an interesting topic we're going to talk about, you know, the warrior and the warrior culture. And before this podcast, Steve and I had a chance to kind of talk about where I come from. And one of the things that I had to say to him was, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, when I say that I'm a warrior, that means something that's very humbling to me. So he gave me a chance in this podcast to talk about this a little bit, because in some ways, when I said that to him the first time I met Steve, I thought, you know, that sounds kind of crazy. You know, as I'm in his facility and I'm getting to know him a little bit, and we're talking a little bit, and I'm telling him a little about myself. The first thing I say is, well, I'm a warrior. And then I think to myself, man, I hope he doesn't think I'm like this crazy dude that you know, believes that I'm some sort of military guy or some guy that is out there slashing and dashing, shooting, you know, gunning and running and gunning and that sort of thing. But what it really means to be a warrior. So let's talk about that a little bit, what that means to me. To be a warrior is to ultimately be somebody who is expected to be humble, is expected to be respectful, is expected to have integrity, honor, and to be an honest person. And my philosophy growing up comes from my history. I'm Hawaiian, native Hawaiian. My father was full-blood Hawaiian, and we have family all over the Hawaiian Islands. We draw our lineage back to the King Kamehameha line of warriors. And so as I was being raised, my father was a Hawaiian Kempo master. So as I was growing up, and my family moved to the Chicagoland area in the early 70s because my father met my mother, Patricia, who was a Chicago person for all her life, on the island of Oahu back in the late 50s, early 60s. My mom ended up spending 15 years on the Hawaiian Islands before becoming kind of homesick. So she talked my father into moving to Chicago back in the early 70s. And so now you have a Hawaiian man that the only time he left the Hawaiian Islands is when he served in Korea. And I believe at the time he was only on the mainland in California, Steve, for a short time. So coming to Chicago for him at that time was kind of a shock, because he was a curly-haired, dark-skinned person in Chicago at a time when we had all kinds of negative energy floating around with race issues and things like this. And one thing you have to understand about the Hawaiian people is that aloha, the aloha is there because we are a people of, or a peaceful culture of people that welcomes everybody. A matter of fact, our islands are meant to be welcoming. And when you come to our islands, we welcome you with a lei, which is the ultimate in acceptance to the Hawaiian people. So it was a culture shock, but my father had his long background in the warrior culture in the Hawaiian nation, we'll just say. And what does that mean? If you look at the tribal nations in the Hawaiian nations, you have gatherers, you have fishermen, and you have the warrior class. And it's very, very regimented like that. And actually all the training and all the cultural studies from a young person on will be based on what your role in the Hawaiian society will be. And in this case, it was the warrior culture. So my father was raised that way in a modern time, and he studied in the 40s and 50s with some of the great Hawaiian warriors at the time. And so did my uncles. So it was common in my family to practice what would be considered the Hawaiian martial arts, you know, Steve? So to cut to the chase, when we came to Chicago, my father opened up some schools in Chicago at the time. And he had a couple schools in Chicago where he was teaching our Hawaiian Kempo. So from a little boy on, I was dragged with him to the dojo, to the karate school, where I thought we all go. That's just what we do. We go to the school. We learn to kick. We learn to punch. We learn to work hard and to learn from our elders and be respectful to our elders. So by the time I was a 10, 11 year old kid, I formally started to practice with my father, and I wasn't at baseball games or football games. I was at the karate schools with him. Tragically, my father was murdered when I was 12 years old. I continued my studies as a martial artist, but I didn't continue on with my father's art for personal reasons my mother had, but she was understanding enough to put me into an Okinawan karate school with people I didn't know. And I was absolutely horrible at it, Steve. You know, I was probably the worst kid in class, you know, and that was in 1977. I started with my father. This would have been by that time in the early 80s. And I started with two friends of mine in class because my mom didn't have a car and it was hard to get us back and forth to the karate school. So I talked two of my friends into taking the class with me because their moms had cars and they would drive us to the school. Well, they both got their orange belts and I was left behind for a full year. But it was in my heart and it was something in me that knew that this is where I belong, man. So to me, belts never meant anything. You know, it was embarrassing as a kid. I remember thinking, I started with these guys and there's a promotion today and their parents are here and I'm not with them. And I felt embarrassed even as a young kid, but it didn't dishearten me. I was just happy to be able to do what my father started with me. And I felt like it was something that connected me to my dad because he was gone and we were grieving. And at least if I could practice the art, I felt like I had a connection to him. So fast forward, 15 years later, I finally got it. I finally understood. 15 years later, I was now a black belt. I was what I thought doing very well in the martial arts. A good friend of mine named Peter Farias, who should be sitting here with me right now. He's another lifelong warrior, should be here with me right now. We ended up taking that school. But what we got from that and what's important for our audience to understand is, what is a warrior? A warrior isn't just somebody who has practiced a punch 30,000 times, who's practiced kicks 30,000 times, who's become proficient at moving, proficient at violence. That's not what a warrior is. The true essence of a warrior is a person who can go out in society and boost people up. Take people who may be bullied, for example, and take that person and mold them into a self-confident, self-assured, good human being that will now go and do that for themselves. And if violence is pushed on them, capable of defending themselves with that small part of what being a warrior is truly about. And I'll say this, this is my 44th year of being a martial artist, of being a warrior. And what I've learned in those 44 years is the need for peace, the need for love, the need for kindness, the need for being humble. And if I could share anything with somebody, I would say that the warrior is somebody that is worthy of being emulated for those attributes more than for their physical prowess or their physical skills or their capabilities. That's the easy part. The hard part is dealing with your personal ego and that part of you that wants to be boisterous or wants to be someone who shows off or goes out and tries to be better than everyone or put everybody down and show them how great you are. A true warrior is a humble, giving person that has one mission in their life, and it is to build other people up. So I hope that kind of
gives you an idea of who I am as a person. And I've been very fortunate to take a job that gives me my dream. On one side, I spent 20 plus years doing HVAC work, heating and air conditioning work. On the other side, I spent the same amount of time as a police officer. But as anyone that's been in law enforcement knows, when I started law enforcement in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of money. And depending upon where you worked, you may have been making $30,000 a year and you had a family and you had a mortgage and you had, you know, responsibilities to pay for, but you did the police work because that was who you are. That is who we are. That's a calling that it's so strong that you can't help yourself but to be attracted to that. So I was fortunate enough to be able to live my dream job, which was to be a police officer. As a warrior, I couldn't see myself doing anything else. How could I be the guy that stops the bullies from hurting other people that aren't capable of defending themselves? So police work for me was a chance to help people that were being taken advantage of, that were being bullied, that were weak and needed strength. And that's what the law enforcement part was able to give me. But the HVAC part of it taught me how to apply the philosophies of a warrior. And what are the philosophies of a warrior? The philosophies are that the only way you're going to get and be successful as a warrior and be able to develop a powerful kick or a powerful punch is to be dedicated to practicing, developing routines, developing a process, developing a way of doing things every single day that build on yesterday, by saying that yesterday was a good day, but today is going to be a better day. And by taking the accomplishments of yesterday and not resting on those morals, be constantly striving to be better than you were yesterday. That served me well, Steve, in my HVAC career. And I ran a business where I had, when I left and I ended my business, I had 5 trucks. I didn't end it for a lack of work. I ended it because I got too doggone old and I couldn't work a midnight shift with the police department and spend 8 hours to 10 hours a day putting furnaces and air conditioners in. So I had to make a decision. But because I had that philosophy, I understood where I began and ended, and I was in full sober, you know, what I needed to do for myself. And I was able to close that business with pride. I was able to sell that business with integrity. I was able to look back and say that I never had one complaint against me, because when I went out to work that day, if I made a mistake, I took ownership. And part of being a warrior is taking ownership. If you truly believe in who you are, you don't need to point a finger at anybody else when there's a mistake made. At the end of the day, a true warrior owns all of it. And we are capable of admitting our mistakes when they're made. And that's how we grow. And that's how we move on, Steve. So I hope that kind of gives you an insight and our podcast audience into what I mean, what Brent Kualoa Cash means when he says, I'm a warrior, and what that means to sheepdog and being able to be a sheepdog and work with sheepdogs, educational programs here for our CCL class, for example.
That's awesome. That really summed it up greatly, just on so many different levels. You know, these days, I mean, the way general society lives is, hey, let's find somebody else to blame. Let's not own my stuff. You know, even from a leadership standpoint within organizations, you know, you'll constantly seeing, oh, well, this department was to blame for that, or this is no, the in the end, the leader is to blame for anything, for everything. You know, it's the leader that failed to provide the proper framing of the mission to his team, or failed to properly give them the tools they needed, or a list of a number of different things. But you know, it's just so refreshing for me to see, you know, you and many other members of our team just living their lives that way, you know, and not just like by day. So the things that you guys obviously don't know, because, you know, you don't know Brent like I do, is that the what you see here is what you'll see when he's on duty at the police station, or what you'll see if you run into him at the store, or what you'll hear other people speak of him. So it's really refreshing to and just for me to see that and to even to feel that. I was just telling Brent and I were talking for a while before we hit record, and the big thing that's different about him and how he carries himself and just being around him is that you can tell there's an aura of just peace, and you know, I think a lot of that comes from your heritage, as you spoke about, just the Hawaiian culture of just how you treat people. But it's just so refreshing for me, you know, when we first met, when you came in, I'm like, okay, who is this dude? I don't know. I like him. He's like, I do. It's like, likewise. He had so much positivity to say when most of my day at the time was just filled with, people complaining about this or that. And it was just a great perspective, you know, and your no quit attitude. I mean, that's just outstanding. You see so many people will just give up. And, you know, it's very inspiring to me to hear your story and the other bits and pieces I've heard of it before of just, you know, how through your career is how, you know, you always knew what your heart said you should do, and that you had to do other things with some of your time, trade some of your time for money to be able to do the things that you really loved. I think a lot of us as entrepreneurs too, know that, and you have to know that that's okay. It's okay to not necessarily jump right into what you want to do. It's okay to have to make separate sacrifices with your time, with your money, with your talents to get to the point you want to be. But don't ever put it to the side. Because I need to do a particular job right now, or go to school right now, or any of those sorts of things. Don't think that changes who you are, because it doesn't. You can be who you meant to be, and just have to understand that there's a process and everything is a due time. And in the end, it will come. You know, if you keep doing the small things with consistency over time, you'll get huge results, whatever part of your life that is. You know, you hear so many guys that complain about things and complain about, oh, okay, I've got a shitty marriage, you know, or I've got a shitty relationship with my kids, or my life is crap, just whatever it is. Well, you're responsible for that, and only you can change that. And if you put in the consistent effort over time, it's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be, oh, I changed, I did something different today, you know, or like it's going to take time, but you will get the results you want. But you just have to have that persistence. And that's the interesting thing that, you know, when you were also talking about the Hawaiian culture with me earlier, is by saying that, you know, you're very, very set on what I would call SOPs. What did you call those, Brent?
Yes. And I like the word. Let's call that SOPs. For me, it's having a process. It's having procedures for everything that we do, Steve. And it's interesting you say that, because if I didn't manage my time, I had someone recently who doesn't like being regimented, and it was said, well, you're like a hamster on a wheel. You know, you do the same thing every day. You know, you show up for work exactly at this time every day. You're in your vehicle every time, every day. You're very, you know, regimented. And I think that it served me personally in business, because when you're in business and you have to get your butt out of bed at 6 in the morning, where there's no paycheck unless you get your butt out of bed at 6 in the morning and do all the necessary things to be able to land that great furnace job or that great HVAC job, or get that interview with your police department and be able to put yourself in the frame of mind to be able to go in there and sell yourself, right? That's what we're really doing. We're selling ourselves to everybody, every contact we come in contact with. And you touched upon something about people and being negative. And negativity is one of those things that creeps into all of us, right? The difference between a warrior and somebody that doesn't understand this process that we're talking about right now is, a warrior understands that you have to feed that positive energy in yourself. So you can either feed the wolf, or you can feed the sheepdog. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be that wolf, or you want to be the sheepdog that's going out there and doing the right thing every day? Or do you want to be that wolf that's predatory and that's looking for the next easy gig or the next easy meal? That sort of thing. Because at the end of the day, we're going to become who we feed. And what I try to do is feed that positive side of me on a regular basis. And believe me when I say, it is not easy. I rely on, you know, quotes, positive quotes from men greater than myself. And I take time to think about that. But what we're talking about here in the sense of business is, you have to have a process for everything you do. And if you really look at the average person, they have the process. If they have to be at work at 9 o'clock, you'll see if you sit up at the 7-Eleven in our town as a patrolman, every day you'll see the guy in the blue charger come in. He walks into that store. You'll see him come out every single day, popping a new pack of cigarettes. Same routine. You'll see him do it every day, you know, smacking those cigarettes to get them lined up. And in the other hand, you'll see a Coca-Cola. So that's his process. So when we talk about being a warrior or having a successful business, the difference is that in the warrior culture, we make sure we have those specific processes because our life depends on it. So if you're supposed to be working out at 9 o'clock in the morning and you do that workout from 9 to 11 o'clock, you will do that every single day. You'll fight to make sure that you're at that workout because you know that that workout from 9 to 11 o'clock, when you walk out of there, you're going to feel like $1 million. There's no room for negativity. And at some point in your life, you're going to realize that every time you did that, you were making a deposit into the bank of positive energy, man. And you made a deposit into a bank of being able to pick somebody else up or be able to help somebody else out because you were regimented, because you did all the things that made you feel or have what we call in the martial arts or in the warrior world, personal power. Personal power is a term that was taught to me many years ago by my grandmaster that said, every time you work out, you're bringing personal power to yourself. And with that power comes a responsibility to pass it on, to pass that on. So when you see another brother warrior, you instantly, like when I met you, I knew I had met somebody like, and you humbled me, by the way, and thank you for those kind words. But what's interesting is we have a way of finding each other, don't we, Steve? Because I see the same thing in you, and it's weird how we come together. But my whole life has been like that. My whole life has been like that. From the people that got me into doing HVAC, they were my students. I was an 18-year-old kid, you know, teaching Ishinryu Karate to two men that I didn't care who they were, where they came from. They wanted to learn, man, and I wanted to teach them. They bowed to me for the knowledge I knew, and I bowed back to them for their thirst for knowledge. The bow, for example, is a way of saying we're all humans, we're all equal here. I have a special skill set that I'm capable of sharing with you. So when we come to the table, my responsibility to the people I come in contact with is to pick them up. And if I have negativity, I don't want to feed that with them. Okay? I need to deal with what I can deal with that brings that negativity. And if I can't deal with it, if there's nothing I can do to change it, then I leave it in the hands of my creator and I move on and I say something positive. And the next person I come in contact with, I give them all the positive energy I could possibly give them. And all I ask from them is that they pass that along. It's like buying a cup of coffee for the guy behind you at Dunkin' Donuts, right? You hope you did that out of kindness, but what you really hope is that he does a kind act for somebody else that day, right? And that's how the warrior looks at our every day. And we try to do that with our businesses as well, is to be able to take the customers that come to us and give them a sense of wow, this isn't your average person. This isn't your average business. These people are sincere. They're helpful. They're knowledgeable. They're professional. They're humble. These are the people I want to do business with. So that's kind of where I come from that standpoint, man. So the process is very important, and it's a set of tasks that you do every day. And recently I was at Police Staff and Command, and we talk about changing our police culture, Steve. When we talk about culture, well, you need to, you know, police departments right now are doing transitions in our culture. We say, well, what does that mean? How do you change a culture? Well, a culture is changed by changing the habits and the process or procedures of your department. So when we say that we want to make better, more professional police departments, we want to show society that we're not, you know, these negative entities that are out there wreaking havoc. We have to make sure that we look at ourselves first humbly. But when we talk about changing a culture, it could be done within your own business. And what it comes down to is, what habits do you do every day? What procedures do you take every day in your business to improve upon them, with the thought that you're going to do it with integrity, you're going to do it with honesty, you're going to do it with honor, and you're going to do it with humility? And when you operate like that and you embrace people, people are going to want to become part of whatever you are. They don't even know what the hell you're doing, but they just want to be part of it. And I hope that that's what I'm able to do with the folks that I come in contact with every day. And I think that's important, from the simple meet and greets to teaching a class of 100 warriors, you know, my system of martial arts.
Well, I think if your interactions with others are anything like your interactions that I've had with you over the time we've known each other, I think that's 100% was 100% certainty. That's what's going on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, brother.
It's true. I like that. I'm not one of those that know me well. I'm not one that mince words. It is what it is. You know, I put it out there. I would just as easily tell you how much you suck if you did, but no, I'm just,
actually, let me talk about that for a minute. You know, I started telling you that I use, growing up, the Ishiru karate system is an Okinawan system. The Okinawan people were subjects to the Japanese people. They were considered lesser. With that said, in modern times, that peace was made between the Japanese and the Okinawans. And so in the culture that I came from, in the Ishiru karate arts, embraced the Bushido from the samurai. And it was a way of living similar to exactly what I'm saying to you today. But what was interesting about that, you said, I will tell you equally how much you suck. And if you're truly a warrior, what would happen after a training session or after a great battle where you were fighting along your colleagues and your comrades and your brothers at arms, right? You're out there fighting, you're battling, and you're in the thick of it. Blood, you know, it's a dirty business and you're out there doing it. After the battle, the warriors would sit down together. And they would call each other out.
Very important.
They would call each other out. And before they could even finish what they were calling them out for, that warrior would say, I apologize. I did not do a clean sweep. Therefore, my brother was killed. That is my fault. And I will take my life if necessary. I'll commit hedikari. And it was so important to be able to do what we call constructive criticism with each other. And that's the honesty part of that warrior triangle I talk about, where you have the honor, the honesty, the integrity. The honesty is, be honest about yourself, okay? If you're not training every day and you're about to go into battle, you might want to check yourself. Or you might want to have a brother that loves you who says, today you need to stay home. You haven't been practicing enough, and I'm worried you're going to die if you go out there, or you're going to be made to be looked bad today. So you need to train harder. And it's that constructive criticism that keeps us all honest. So we expect that. And this is what's so important that people understand in business and elsewhere, is it comes down to being able to accept criticism and to become better than it and to be able to grow from it. And we also talked about ownership. Ownership. In my opinion, you can't be a warrior without taking complete ownership of everything. And you talked about that and you were spot on, man. We have to make the philosophy complete by making sure that we are honest with each other. And as much as it hurts, you need to have your ego checked once in a while by your brothers. And you have to be honest with yourself. And once you've done that, you're now free to become whoever you want to be in your life. You're not encumbered by anything because you are who you are. You are what you are, and you recognize your weaknesses and your strengths. And once you recognize your weaknesses and strengths, you can build on your strengths and you can develop your weaknesses to benefit whatever it is that your mission is asking you to complete.
That's huge. Huge words right there. Go back and listen to that again, guys. You're going to want to hear that at least twice. You know, I want to go back and touch on something you talked about. You were talking about, you know, your routine. And one thing that I found is that we're talking about routine. To clarify, we're not talking about like just doing the same thing every day. We're talking about choosing how you want to spend your time and doing the same thing either day. So the choice is yours. So not like, you know what? I just went and hit the drive-thru and I got 3 Big Macs. You know, I don't really give a shit if you do that at noon every day. You know, it's your choice. You're making the choice. You say, you know what? I'm gonna get healthy and I'm going to eat right, but then you still do the same thing. Yeah, it's your SOP at the time, but that doesn't mean it's not serving you. So I would just urge all you guys to, you know, when you're thinking about you know, what you're doing today. Okay, habits are good, but maybe there's some habits you also need to change.
Good. Great point,
you know,
Steve.
For me, I mean, for the first probably 40 years of my life, I had no routine. I mean, you know, I would have a routine of what I would do, and, you know, go to work, all those sorts of things. But I didn't have any. I didn't choose it. It kind of chose me. Now I choose. So the first thing I do every morning before my feet hit the floor, well, most of the time, sometimes I will make a bathroom run because I am getting old and I've been trying to get my water every day. You know, so sometimes we're a quick run. But the first thing I usually do is I'll sit down and I'll take my phone and I use an app called the G-Code app, and I'll type in five things that I'm grateful for that day. So the first things that flow through my mind are positive, and just to put my whole day in appreciation for that. Once that's done, I'll get up. I'm a slow waker, so I usually take about 10, 15 minutes just to walk around a little bit, wake up, and then I head to the gym. Come back from the gym, take some time, usually meditation. I will spend some time in something spiritual, whether sometimes it's the Bible, sometimes it's other things. I will send out either in person or messages of gratitude to people that have done things for me. Nice. Usually a lot of times it's to my wife, because she's my biggest person on my team, you know. So, but from there, I'll get into my day, you know. But those first couple hours are pretty much the same every time, you know. Usually I'm up about 4:30. That gets extended a little bit on the weekend. Sometimes I'll sleep in a little bit, but the first few hours are always spent the same way. And for me, what I've noticed is when I made that change. Everything changed. I mean, from how I felt to how I act, to how I operated, to just how much I got done in a day. Not huge changes, but just being really decisive. And now I've actually kind of expanded that, where I kind of set my days up in blocks. And given there's going to be 10% of the time that things need to be fluid and things change. Like today, took a day off to help my daughter move, came here to record this. This wasn't a typical day at all, but 90% of the time, I'm blocking so much time on Mondays to do these tasks. I'm blocking so much time on this day. I'm blocking time on this day. I'm doing this day. I have a meeting here. So I really try to be very, very decisive on my time and how that's spent, because that's the one thing that it doesn't matter how much money I make. It doesn't matter. I can't buy more of, you know, that I have what time I have. You know, tomorrow's not promised. I have today. And I want to do the most I can with that, and try to move towards my goals, you know, both, you know, personally and professionally, as much as I possibly can.
Love it.
Does it work out 100%? No, I mean, I'm human. I screw up all the time. I mean, I get more stuff wrong often than I do right. But with that structure, I know that I'm always taking 3 or 4 steps forward, and I may take 1 step back, but I'm still moving forward. And I know that if I consistently do that over time, I'm going to get the results, you know, that I desire.
Absolutely. You know? Such is life. Wow, you just inspired me, brother. As I hear you say that, it reminds me that I need to do more of that. And one thing that you just pointed out was, you know, your routine starts with positive vibes in the day, and that kind of sets the tone for the day. And I need to do more of that. You just reminded me of something that in my life I have done, and as life gets hectic and my shifts, I don't always wake up with those thoughts. And I think I need to take a minute myself in the morning and think about the things that I'm grateful for. And because at the end of the day, you also said something that tomorrow's not guaranteed to any of us. And, you know, all of us and everyone out there in podcast land can relate that we've all suffered some sort of loss, and you regret that you didn't spend more time with loved ones, or that you didn't make that phone call. So you're reminding that of me, you know, by making those 5 positive vibe thoughts out there, it sets a tone for the day, and it keeps you humble. And I think that's a good thing that we can all do. And I need to do more of that, Steve. And I want to thank you for that. That was powerful in itself, brother.
And staying grounded, I mean, for me, is where it all starts. You know, it's like we're all going to have good days. We're all going to have bad days. We're all going to hit all kinds of adversity. You know, I'm sure we could both sit here for 12 hours straight and tell tales of adversity that we've been through. But that's the interesting thing, that what I've come across, especially like those people that are in business or have been in business and as an entrepreneur, oftentimes the tales of adversity are huge. But the one difference is, I think, is the mindset is, you know, there's people who are just wired a little different. We walk to a little different drum.
Yes.
You know, we want to take personal responsibility for ourselves and, you know, whatever that means and brings. Whereas, you know, we don't want to depend on anybody else. We really want to do things ourselves. You know, obviously we have teams we work with and everything, but just to be able to have that mentality of, you know what, I am going to control today. I am going to, you know, even control my destiny. You know, it's very, very powerful when you get to that place in your mind and you understand that, you know, I am not a victim. I am me. I am made perfect. You know, for me, I believe that I was created in God's image. And you know, he doesn't screw up, you know, even to the point of like people will wonder, hey, Steve, have you ever had hair? I say, well, not for long, you know, not for long.
I'd yeah, me either.
You know, this is the way I look at it, Brent. It's, you know, it's you know, given the truth that God doesn't make mistakes, right?
No, he does not.
So, well, then if that's the case, then, you know, he may have made some mistakes, but because of the fact that, you know, he made both of our heads perfect, clearly,
yes.
And many other bald men. You know, if you're bald, God made your head perfect,
right,
and it's very, very attractive as it is. It doesn't need hair to dress it up. So,
absolutely,
the ones that weren't quite so, they need the hair to be able to do something with. But us bald guys, we're at a clear advantage.
Oh, I concur completely. Yeah, and I do my own haircuts. That's one of the other benefits of not having a lot of hair. I just shave the heck out of it.
That's what I do. But you know what? You have a new appreciation for how much of a pain in the ass shaving is when you have not only a face to shave, but a head to shave. It's double trouble. So,
you know, yes,
I think you're kind of like me, where I can get by with a day or two sliding once in a while, and then
I take
every opportunity to not do it. And it's also, for me, it was also hard. Like the skin on, man, this is taking a weird, really weird direction, but the skin on my head is like way more sensitive than my face. So it took me forever to find the right gel and the right razor, not to, like, you know, looking like I got beat up every time I shaved my head, you know.
So there's hope for me. I tried that shaving thing, man. I had to stop because you said, I was cutting myself.
I will hook you up. I finally found the secret sauce after I've been shaving it for like 20 years now.
And
I finally found, it took 20 years, but I found the secret sauce.
Well, that's why we had to meet, because I don't have the secret sauce. I take one of those shavers and I shave it off. And I, at one point, I did try to take a razor in that. And I left them. I left my bathroom with blood streaming down my face and scared the hell out of my kids. I ended that.
I will hook you up, because then I will tell you that, like, there is very, very few feelings on this earth than putting a freshly shaved head on a cold pillow. All you bald guys out there, am I preaching or what? I know you all know, but it definitely feels great, but. Well, what is your daily routine look like? Do you have a particular time you work out?
Yeah, I do.
You get into?
So I've been working the 3 to 11 shift at my police department for the last, about close to 15 years, and I've chose that. I could be on days, but the afternoon shift, I'm somebody that has always historically stayed up late, and I'm not an early riser. I never have been, but I've had to do it when I was a detective, for example. I had to change my shift around. I was a detective here in Moni for, 4 years. And during that time, I had to completely change my routine, which wasn't easy. But for me, every day, every single day, you know, I'm usually in bed every night by 2 a.m. I just can't come home. I have to decompress. I have to, like, literally decompress the full day, think back to what I did, what I said through the day, how I can do better. And that's where I do a lot of reflecting. And catching up to the news and things like this. So I'm usually in bed by 2. I'm always up by 9 a.m. the next morning. I have a 1 hour where I drink my coffee. I watch, and I'm going to tell you, I watch Fox News. And I get my news from trusted news sources. And then at that point, at 10 o'clock, I start my personal workout. I always do 30 minutes of hardcore cardio. I'm a big dude. I'm a big Hawaiian guy. I've been on a keto diet for a little bit because I got to keep that in check, because my only vice is food and I enjoy it. But I have to check that because, you know, as we get older, we do a little bit too much of that. But every day routinely, and I can't, if I didn't work out that day, I'm not happy. So 30 minutes, usually on my elliptical, my bike, my bicycle, my bike outside or jogging. And then I'll spend 45 minutes lifting weights to make sure my bones are growing and I'm staying healthy. Three times a week, I practice my martial arts. And for me, it could be empty hand, what we call sayao or forms, doing that. I have formal classes that I actually teach, and those are the days that I would maybe do my kumite or doing any type of sparring with my students that I have. So my daily routine is based on getting my exercise and making sure that I'm practicing the attributes necessary to be proficient in my martial arts, because as I get older, 44 years of doing this stuff, I actually decline. So you reach a peak in your career, and then you're in a steady decline. And that's why a lot of us guys are in what we call the healing arts. So if you're a martial artist and you've spent your career doing this, you become very broken. Your fingers are broken. Your body's broken. I've had 17 surgeries all related to fighting. Both my shoulders, full thick tears. I've had 8 surgeries on my left knee. I've had 3 on my right, my hands, broken noses, all that kind of stuff. So we find ourselves hurting later on in our career. And so we study a new art called Helio. And that's where you're doing massages and Jijo, and you're using stimuli, and you're using acupuncture and heating up the meridians in our body. That's an art. That's the advanced art that you end up going to because you're so freaking beat up from getting your ass kicked, by the way, for years. In my daily routine, I go from there and I have a German Shepherd. And for the last 4 years, I have been personally going back to school to become a dog trainer for police work and for personal protection work. I train Belgian Malinois, which I've had a Belgian for many years. I've had German Shepherds for many years, but I actually took a very serious interest in developing these dogs 4 years ago when I made a decision that's what I wanted to do. And maybe that's how I want to retire, is have a full kennel of dogs and train them. Steve, I got to tell you, sometimes, you know, the police career can leave you coming home and wanting to spend more time with your dog than people sometimes, you know, and you need to work through that, you know, and it's okay, you know, part of my routine I had to bring in there was being able to train my dog. So now I've got a block of, roughly about 2.5 hours where every day, like clockwork, it's focused on my personal power of training and developing my dog to be a high speed, low drag, lovable animal that's capable of skills that a warrior would be proud of, right? So my day then, I get myself together, I get my shower, I love on my family if they're there, and then I head off to work. And, you know, when we talk about routines as police officers, that's where my routine gets broken, because I come to work, and if I'm in my office, my secure space where I'm operating in the orange zone, you know, I'm not in complete yellow where I'm completely guard down, but I can kind of put my guard down. But as soon as I hit the street, I'm operating in a very heightened sense of awareness. And I'm not one of these officers that drive straight to get the Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and then I head out and I drive around for a little bit. I try to break that up every day, because I'm also aware that we have operational security and that there's folks out there that are paying attention to us. And so we don't want to be in that kind of routine as a warrior. So those are calculated decisions I make as a warrior, as a police officer, throughout my day. And on my weekends are family time and personal time to be able to decompress. So that's when I teach my classes. I have wonderful students. I've got some of the best, most talented martial artists that I've ever spent my career working with. I've closed my schools. I've had schools that have been very, very, how can I put it? Very good for my family and good for the families that I've had a privilege to teach and become part of their families. When I define success, it's not by how many students I have, but it's the journey I take with the people that I share my art with, right? The schools were too much to keep up. We had big schools, lots of students. I raised my kids in those schools. So all my children started when they were very little, and it was important for me to have martial arts schools back then. Because I wanted them to grow up in the dojo like I did. And so when my son moved away, my son Brandon, who's a 5th degree black belt, he's master level in the Eskrima arts that we practice. When he moved away, my heart broke a little bit. He was supposed to be my instructor, but he found love and he went and followed his heart. When my second oldest son said, "Dad, going to college, I'm moving out. I love the art.
you know, and I'm going to practice it, but I'm not going to be around to help you with the school. Finally, my baby, my young lady, my girl, who trained with me, up until the point where 2 years ago, I was telling you that we went to Hawaii, to the island of Maui, for the World Championship Eskrima Kaliarnis Federation Tournament. It's a big deal in the Filipino martial arts, where every 2 years we have a world championship. Starts out at the regionals, where we go, we compete in regionals. You have to be one or two in your division, first or second place in division. Then you go to the nationals, and you're training your butt off for all these. You get to the nationals, usually it's in California. Now you got the best in the nation there. You compete in that, and if you get first or second in those competitions, now you're eligible to go to the worlds. My daughter Lily, out of all my kids, made it all the way through. Even my son Brandon, who was quite talented, didn't reach that level. And he's probably going to kill me if he hears this for sharing that. But he's a warrior in his own right. But my girl, she did it, and she did it with serious competition. You know, competing against the Filipino teams that come from the Cebu, and being able to beat these competitors as an American is a big deal. Now, granted, she's a Hawaiian, you know, and in Filipino Hawaiian cultures, we kind of cross train with each other, but there's things that aren't always shared, you know, and I don't do this at my school, but you know, some of those old school Filipino masters, they hold back on some of their training. So when we are able to defeat a team that we respect and that we hold as our gold standard, it's a big deal to us, right? So we go to Hawaii, to Lahaina, and Lily competed. And she said to me that day, she said, "Dad, I've been working my butt off. I'm here to compete. I'm here to do our family proud. But when I'm done, Dad, I just want to get ready for college, and I don't want to have to be, you know, that regimen I talk about. My kids, man, they are at that school. We went just like they had to go to regular school. They had to come to the karate dojo, and we did it 3 days a week when they were growing up." She said, "Dad, I just kind of want to just see what life's like outside of the martial arts." I said, "All right, well, I tell you what, I'll make you a deal." And I knew I couldn't hold her to it if she didn't win. I said, if you become this champion today, if you go and you fight today, and you've got some stiff competition, and you become get your gold medal." And I set the bar high that day. And I said, "And if you go and you do your sai out, your dance, your form, your stick dance that we do, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful dance." I said, "And you become a champion, you get your gold medal on that." I said, "You can walk out of this place and you can go down to Lahaina Beach and spend the rest of your time just hanging out. You don't even have to come back to the tournament." And she smiled at me and said, "Okay." And I'm thinking, I got her now, man, because I know her competition. I'm not saying I don't want to root for my girl, but I did that in kind of a selfish way because I didn't want to see her leave. You know, I love training with my kids. Well, I can tell you this, Steve. Lily's competition that day, just coincidentally, it was a 4-day tournament. Her divisions, we had thousands of people come to this, all over the world come to compete in this thing. It's a big deal. You saw, I kind of showed you a picture.
Yeah, yeah.
We had our American teams. It looks like the Olympics, quite frankly. And it's put on like that. It's a professionally run thing. Lily's competition was stiff, and it was the same day. It was the day we got to Maui. So Lily had an opportunity that day to do what I asked her to do and then spend the rest of her time hanging out. Well, we went to the fighting. I'm her coach. You know, and she's fighting. She had 4 fights that day. Well, she took a gold medal that day. And I thought, I sat back in the chair just couldn't believe how proud I was. But part of me's like, "You dumbass. You fucking made her a deal. She's halfway there, man. You're about to lose her." So now I'm like, "Oh shit." So we get called to the judge's table. Okay, Lily's Sayao, her forms competition is at 3:00 today. So get her ready by 3:00. And I'm like, wow, she gets to do everything the first day. That's freaking great, man. So she goes up there. It's 3:00. She's got, I'm seeing, you know, I recognize the one little Filipino girl from the nationals. Okay. She's got some stiff competition. Lily comes to me and says, "Dad, I want to add a couple extra moves to my form." Because she knew that the girl that she was competing against was really skilled in using the stick in the back of her hand. So Lily wanted me to work on a transition with her. And now it's 2:00 and she knows she has to be on at 3:00. And she spent And I could show you on my phone where she was on Kaava Beach in Hawaii on the island of Oahu the day before practicing her form for her competition. And I mean, this was a full three minute form because you have to do 2.5 minutes just to be qualified in your form. You can't just go out there and do 1 minute. You got to do at that level, at black belt level, they want a full 2.5 minutes. So she was at 3 minutes just to make sure. And at the last minute, this girl comes to me and says, I need you to add a couple things because I really need this one. And I almost said, nah, you're okay. You're fine. Just go. But, you know, of course, the dad and me and the warrior said, all right, well, what are you thinking? And we developed this really cool, like if you're looking at the form, you know, there's powerful, there's, you know, like, wow, that's some solid, real fighting stuff. And then there's just cool shit, right? That's that we call that stickmanship. Stickmanship is just cool stuff, right? So Lily, who's very nimble with that kind of stuff, I said, okay, baby, here's what I want you to do. I want you to, at this point, I want you to do these next 5 moves here. Some stickmanship. Well, she went and competed. And, when they announced the gold medalist, Lillian Cash. And I sat back in my chair once again, proud as shit. But I wanted to just go crawl up in a hole and go, what the fuck did you just do, dude? And what do you think she did? She got her gold medal. She went to my grandmaster and she gave him what we call mana. She gave him, you know, you go on one knee and you grab your grandmaster's hand, you put it to your forehead, you give mana, you give your love and respect to your elders. And then she came over to me, she gave me mana, and she stood up with a big smile on her face and said, Dad, if you need me, I'll be down at Lahaina Beach. And she walked out of that freaking school, man. And we were in a huge, you know, facility. And my wife's like, yeah, and I'll be with her too. And they both took off. I didn't see her the rest of the time that we were there, man. So, as far as routines go, my kids lived with that. And I finally, when Lily did that, I taught, at our actual formal schools for about another year until 2019. And then I took my black belts that I had and I sat down with them. I said, look, I'm closing the school. I'm no longer accepting new students, but you're my family, you know? And I would like to have class on Friday nights for just black belt level. And we've been doing that ever since at my home. Oh, I turned my, awesome. I mean, I already have a facility. Like, you know, you've been doing this for 44 years. You've got, you know, the best equipment you can imagine in your home, you know, and we've been doing that way ever since. So part of my routine is at 5 o'clock on Fridays, these close people to me come to my home and we practice advanced skill base. And it basically is to keep us up, being able to fight, to be able to do our forms. But what's funny is, Steve, we're all getting older and all these guys that are my black belts, I mean, they range from 72 years old. I think the youngest black belt student I have is 36 years old, and she's the baby of our school. You know what I mean? But I've got some wonderful people someday. I hope you're able to meet these folks. They're true masters at what they do. They're the most kind, humble people. And the last thing I'm going to say today is this. You'll know a true warrior when you meet them, because there's somebody, when you meet them, they're the kindest, nicest person. And you'll never know until you walk into a dojo with them and all of a sudden you see a completely different side of them. And I'm not talking about a mean, nasty side. I'm talking about a highly skilled, special ability that is anybody can recognize that is special. That is very special what I'm watching right now. And then that person who you just watch do this stuff, or you watch them fight and they're ferocious, they're sudden, they're fast, and they have violence of action. All the attributes that you train a warrior to be, they exhibit all that. And then as soon as they're done, it's almost like a switch gets turned off and they come over to you and they're wanting to know if you want to go out and get an ice cream cone and hang out. That's the awesome kind of people I'm used to, brother.
That's awesome. And that's the real deal. You know, I mean, you see so many times these days is you see two different kinds of people. You see people like that you would never know. And then you see people that walk around and tell everyone they meet, you know, how much of a bad motherfucker they are. You know, I do this, you know, don't look at me wrong or I might do something to you. And you just have to laugh in your mind because you're just like, how, first of all, you kind of feel sad for them because the fact that they have to go around and do that to try to feel significant themselves, or if that's a driving that to me, like that's in my mind, like thinking from a psychology standpoint, it's like there must be something missing in their self that they need to try to impose that on other people. But, then seeing people coming across a lot of people in this line, like yourself, it's just very refreshing.
Refreshing. I appreciate that.
So many different ways. And there's one last thing I will end with, today. And you were actually the first one, outside of, well, Jim and I that known that we're actually doing something very, very cool. So, Sheepdog, the company is. So we are actually, just started a, nonprofit. It's called the Sheepdog Foundation, and the Sheepdog Foundation will be doing a bunch of different things, but mainly it's our motto is basically we stand with those that stand the line. So basically to help out everything
from
injured, fallen officers, families, injured, probably be a scholarship component to it. We're working on a lot of things, but, this is the official announcement that it is happening. The paperwork is getting filed, and, hopefully within a short couple months, you'll see us raising some funds and hopefully doing some good for our folks in blue all over Chicagoland, and hopefully it grows into someday it's all over the nation. So,
Steve, I appreciate that. And just for the folks that are listening to this podcast, Steve indicated that he wants to be able to give back. Last weekend on Saturday, we had in our town a police, appreciation day during the National Memorial Week. And, for us this year, it was a very important year because of everything that's happening in society. And Sheepdog donated a firearm, that was raffled off. So, they're the real deal. They put their money where their mouth is, and their actions speak louder than their words. Very humble people here who I consider warriors. And they do things for the right reason and not just for recognition.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. I mean, everything else is temporary, being able to give back and do some good and help some people and, hopefully leave things better than we found them here.
Right on, man. And that's a good way to end this thing, to leave things better than we found it. And that is my philosophy also. And I hope that someday I can leave my police department better than I found it.
Oh, I have no doubt that you will. And in turn, by seeing you do that, the neat thing about that is how it carries on, how legacy, this could turn into a long discussion, but don't worry, guys. But just that, just from a legacy standpoint of, it's one thing to talk about things. It's another thing to do things. And the youth of today, the young officers for you are watching everything you're doing. Even when you don't think they're watching, they're watching. And they're going to look at that way more than what they hear you say. Yes, they'll put a lot of significance to what comes out of your mouth, but they will put more significance in your actions and how you show up and what you do and what you've done. And it's just an exciting time. I mean, it's with everything going on, it's you guys are doing the toughest job in the world. There's no time. It's also more rewarding. It's like I just think about like the whole how hard something is and how rewarding it is are definitely proportional. I mean, when's the last time you did something that was super easy you found rewarding? I mean, it's the harder it is. And so like you guys have the opportunity, to make an even larger impact on people, and to change minds. It's interesting. Seeing and like my son is just about finished with the academy. He's been an FTO now and is a police officer for one of the towns here and nearby in Chicagoland here. And he really threw me the other day. I think I already told you this, but I'll tell you again. So he's got all his gear. So he's going through his gear. It was on the weekend. He has work. He was just actually clearing into shadow phase where basically he's driving in his own car and just having other officers back him up and observe him as opposed to riding along with somebody. So he's getting all his stuff ready. He's like, I'm starting to shadow, got my gear. I'm like, what's in that big bag? And I look at it and it's like, it's a bag full of toys. And of course, I'm a big believer in tough love, so I do give my son as much shit as I possibly can. So I
said, as we should,
As we should. I mean, it's just as I was tell people, they say, well, how did he turn out? Or I said, well, if, years and years of beatings, you'd be amazing what you can get him to do.
Right.
But in all seriousness, so he had this bag, and I'm like, what's in the bag? And I see this stuffed dog, popping out. And at that point, I kind of lost. I was like, dude, what are you taking toys to work now? Is that your stuffed animal for break? Or you guys nap after donuts? Or, you know, I just gave him a real hard time. Like, oh, look, there's a couple of them in there. So what is it? He's got a good friend of his named Guzzy. I said, what, are you and Guzzy play dogs now at work? Oh, that's so cute. And then he explained to me, and I felt kind of like an ass for giving him a hard time just for the slightest moment. He said, no, Dad, you know, we see a lot of motor vehicle crashes and, you know, and occasionally some fires or other stuff. And he goes, I wanted to have something to give any kid I run across, you know, so that can be a moment in time where, you know, he might remember that of, you know, hey, you know, a lot of times we're seeing people at their worst hour. And it doesn't always have to be a bad interaction. He's just like, that's just a chance for me to make a little difference, you know, one kid at a time. And I'm like,
You know, it makes me feel good to hear that we have good young men like your son coming up in the ranks, and he is already practicing a philosophy that is going to be how we move forward and how we change how our profession has been looked at in the last few years. And it's going to be that kind of behavior by good officers like him that will change the next generation of kids to say, I remember when.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for spending this time for me. We'll have to have you on probably about another dozen times here in the near
thanks,
future.
Brother. I appreciate and we'd probably, it.
And we would probably still have more to talk about. But
absolutely.
Everybody out there in podcast land, I hope you all enjoyed the show. This is Steve Schaubacher for the Tactical Entrepreneur.
Have a good day. Brent Cash, have a good day.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're still listening to this episode, that means you gained some type of value. So if you could share this to a friend, leave a review, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode of Tactical Entrepreneur Podcast.